Right, in the first few verses of chapter 6 deals with
Christians going to worldly people asking for help judging.
Yeah. They're kind of going outside the congregation, okay, for, let's just say, legal questions, okay, to someone else to make decisions for them, whether they have disputes or errors or problems, instead of handling it within the congregation. Now, I have a few verses, and in Matthew 27, somebody wants to get that. I'm going to have a few verses in Acts and Matthew. But Matthew 27, I'll get that one. And this will be the trial of Jesus. And what I want to just briefly deal with here, I hope I can deal with that point, that civil courts recognize, even in the first century, there's things we don't want to deal with. You know, there's things that really, they're not really in our jurisdiction, or it's, you know, it's kind of like, y'all handle it. That sort of thing. And that's kind of what we'll see in the first part here. And when I look at Matthew 27, verses 17 through 26, when therefore they were gathered together, Pilate said to them, "Whom do you want me to release for you, Barabbas or Jesus, who is called Christ?" For he knew that because of envy they had delivered him up. And while he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife said to him, saying, "Have nothing to do with that righteous man, for last night I suffered greatly in a dream because of him." But the chief priests and the elders persuaded the multitude to ask for Barabbas and to put Jesus to death. But the governor answered and said to them, "Which of the two do you want me to release for you?" And they said, "Barabbas." Pilate said to them, "Then what shall I do with Jesus, who is called Christ?" They all said, "Let him be crucified." And he said in verse 23, "Why, what evil has he done?" But they kept shouting all the more, "Let him be crucified." And when Pilate saw that he was accomplishing nothing, but rather the riot was starting, he took water and washed his hands in front of the multitude, saying, "I am innocent of this man's blood. See to that yourselves." And all the people answered and said, "His blood be on us and on our children." Then he released Barabbas for them. But after having Jesus punished, he delivered him to be crucified. Now, scourged. So, in my mind, that kind of deals the idea that he was innocent, okay? But because of the shouting and the riot that was going to take place, you know, this is okay, all right? But he saw nothing harmful in it. Now, the real case, I want to look at Acts 23. Acts 23:25. Just a minute, read it, okay? And this is Paul being brought before the courts and his actions with them. Acts 23:25-30. And he wrote a letter having this form: "Claudius Lysias, to the most excellent governor Felix, greetings. When this man was arrested by the Jews and was about to be slain by them, I came upon them with the troops and rescued him, having learned that he was a Roman. And wanting to ascertain the charge for which they were accusing him, I brought him down to their council. And I found him to be accused over questions about their law, but under no accusation deserving death or imprisonment. And when I was informed that there would be a plot against the man, I sent him to you at once, also instructing his accusers to bring charge against him before you." So the soldiers, okay, and on and on. Now, 24, 3 through 9. "We acknowledge that in every way and everywhere, most excellent Felix, with all thankfulness, but that I may not weary you any further, I beg you to grant us by your kindness a brief hearing. For we have found this man a real pest and a fellow who stirs up dissension among all the Jews throughout the world and a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. And he even tried to desecrate the temple. And then we arrested him, and we wanted to judge him according to our own law. But Lysias, the commander, came along, and with much violence took him out of our hands, ordering his accusers to come before you. And by examining him yourself concerning all these matters, you will be able to ascertain the things which we accuse him. The Jews joined in the attack at that point. Now, and Acts 25, 6. 6 through 10. And after he had spent not more than 8 or 10 days among them, he went down to Caesarea, and on the next day he took his seat on the tribunal and ordered Paul to be brought. And after he had arrived, the Jews had come down from Jerusalem, stood around him, bringing many and serious charges against him, which they could not prove. While Paul said in his own defense, I have committed no offense either against the law of the Jews or against the temple, or against Caesar. But Festus, wishing to do the Jews a favor, answered Paul and said, are you willing to go up to Jerusalem and stand trial before me on these charges? But Paul said, I am standing before Caesar's tribunal where I ought to be tried. I have done no wrong to the Jews, as you also are very well known. Now, and the last one I want is 26, 30, and 32. 26, 30, and 32. And the king arose, and the governor, and Bernice, and those who were sitting with them, and when they had drawn aside, they began talking to one another, saying, this man is not doing anything worthy of death or imprisonment. And Agrippa said to Festus, this man might have been set free if he had not appealed to Caesar. So what I'm trying to deal with there is the idea that even the Roman government recognized there are some issues that you people need to settle yourselves within your own religion. So it wasn't a new concept over here when we get to chapter 6 of Romans. So when we look at chapter 6, let's look at this a minute. Again, if you've read this, please read these and make any comments and marks on the papers what I've given you. What are the two major ways to define the problem in 1 through 8? What's the problem?
Brothers are going against one another. Brothers are defrauding one another.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Not being able to work things out amongst themselves.
Not working things about among themselves. They've got some internal disputes. Hey, is that new to the Corinthian church? No. All right. They've got some internal disputes and some quarrels. And you know what? They want to go outside the church, the group, the Christians, the believers, the congregation, for judgments. Now, two major ways to find the problem. And also, they weren't judging their internal problem. One is they want to go outside, and the next thing they're not doing right is not doing the judgment internally. Okay, for those sort of things. Now, how are they instructed to correct their problem? I got a couple of answers in 1 through 8. The obvious is what?
Judge within
themselves. That's right. Don't go outside. All right? Don't go outside. And the second one is, and this is interesting, what's the second thing to solve the problem, to deal with the problem?
Humble themselves.
Yes. Choose among yourselves.
A wise man.
Wise men. Okay? Choose among yourselves people capable of dealing with this. What do we see in chapters 1 through 4 about wise men? They said they were wise men, didn't they? I mean, they said they were wiser than Paul. So, what do you mean you can't judge within yourself on these religious issues? But you say your people are wise, and you know things. And
they weren't trustworthy.
Yeah, right. Right. So it's an interesting angle that he uses on this about the idea of wise men. So he chooses some men to handle these disputes. And we know in Romans 13 that civil matters are handled with civil governments. That's Roman government. Any kind of government does that. whatever kind of government. Now, the phrase go to law in 1 to 6 could be translated what other way? You kind of look at this. But go to law could be, like we were saying, disputes and quarrels and divisions and schisms and, you know, things like that, okay? Even go to court. But the point is that we're going outside of the congregation to deal with issues. This issue here about the court, or going outside, is that one that they brought up to Paul, or one that was brought to Paul?
Well, he's still answering.
That's right. Basic 1 through 6 are still questions that were brought to him by the house of Chloe. Okay? Yeah. And so for some reason they didn't want to bring this up to her, didn't think it was important, or they could handle it themselves or something, but it's a problem.
Well, do you think maybe it's they knew that he wasn't going to approve, and so, well, yeah, why would we bring it up when we're going to get in trouble for it?
Maybe they're embarrassed. We're wise people, and we can't handle this. Okay? Or, you know, anything causing a schism or a division, which they were pretty well experts at, because they were going down that road, they didn't want to bring that up either to Paul. So it's interesting, okay? It may seem like a minor issue. Apparently there was some issues concerning this. Now, there's an interesting thing in the next question. The phrase, do you not know, verses 2, 3, 9, 15, 16, 9, it kind of does the chapter. Here's the apostate. Do you not know? What do you mean?
Do you not remember?
You should already know.
You should already know. Yeah? You mean you don't know that? You mean you don't know that? You people are wise. Remember, it's all our chapters before? Okay? You people know everything. You know more than the apostle. You people think you're kings. Put me in the arena. Put us apostles in the arena. Make a show of us. Because we're useless. Okay? Now, basically, they were arrogant, the Corinthians, in this wisdom that they thought they had. And this is kind of a rebuke. Okay? Kind of put them in their place. Do you not know? So again, this was carryover from the other chapters. And they had that arrogance and the arrogance... their know-it-all situation, do you not know, cause these schisms and divisions and ill feelings. And heaven forbid that. Now, number 5. Were there any wise men, verse 5, in the congregation? What would these wise men be deciding if there were some? Oh, there was wise men in there. By their own estimation. But what kind of issue? Now, we're going to branch off a little here and let your memory or your imagination, okay? What kind of issues would you do? What kind of issues would there be that you would want decided within a congregation and not take it outside?
With the immorality with the guy's stepmother.
Okay. The incest there, okay? I'm thinking, how would you take that to court or take it to an outside judgment? Apparently,
well,
they weren't judging
could.
It.
His father could have.
Yes, sure could. Okay. Could there be any issues today or anything else? Go ahead. Is there anything else that, even today, that could be an issue that you could resolve within a congregation, but somehow you take it outside? I've got a couple in mind.
I was just going to say that. One of the things that they would be deciding would be who is right or wrong in certain situations if there was an argument.
That's exactly where this goes. There is a... Apparently there was a conflict because we've got questions that need resolving. Some they wanted to openly ask the apostle, and some, I guess, they didn't want to ask the apostle. That's the one we're going over, the 1 through 6. If I contributed 30% of the funds inside the building now, and we're going to build another, the thoughts were we'll build another classroom like this one next door, or we'll tear this down. and we're at odds. Kind of make divisions in the group schisms. No, we want to spend the money or we don't want to spend the money. Okay? In reference to the treasurer. All right? And it gets to be a heated discussion. And it could go to the point even because we're not going to spend it on preachers anymore. We're going to build buildings. Whatever we're going to do. Okay? Is that kind of a problem you could solve within a congregation or at least work on it with some wise people? You could take it to courts. You could. I was thinking of another one. Sometimes congregations get so small that they, what can I say, close the congregation, I guess. Okay? They don't have it anymore. Y'all ever seen that or not? Yes. What do you do with the property in the building? Say the people that left, it usually goes a couple of ways. They'll give the building and the property and everything to another group. Okay? And it may be a Spanish group or someone else that has enough population or wants to make something out of it. Okay? At least usually when they get to that point, they're all too old. Or if you sell the building, well, you could take the money and split it among yourselves. Well, that really fosters some greed, wouldn't it? Okay? Or you sell the building and y'all move to another congregation and you bring the funds with you. Or you make distribution to whatever it is. Okay? So you can see here that if somebody really wants to be difficult, you could have some real disputes when it comes to money. And that happens sometimes. Okay? You see the problem? Can we not solve this internally? What to do with the closing of a building? Okay? Selling a property, giving it away, that sort of thing. And that's a real thing that occurs. I don't know what your experience was on it.
That's what it was.
It was? Mm-hmm. You know how it was resolved?
The congregation we were at that dismembered, they were leasing the building, mm-hmm. and the lease ran out, so they just didn't renew it. And then the songbooks were sent to the Philippines. It was just agreed upon where the physical, even the communion trays,
yes.
where everything was going to be dispersed. It was decided what other congregations it would go to.
Okay. Lease is a little easier to handle. Okay.
Yes.
But you can see there could be issues within a congregation that you can handle internally. Now sometimes, you know, you may have to go with legalities. But certainly your first course with the instruction of the apostle here was to deal with those issues. Any others? It's kind of hard sometimes to think of issues, okay? But things occur. Yes, ma'am.
I was just going to say, well, if, you know, God forbid, but somebody's taken from the treasury.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Let's say that some of the cash, mm-hmm. okay, is being removed, and that does happen. You can see it sometimes in other religious groups, okay? What do you do? Well, we're going to withdraw from them, for sure, right? And they're not going to be doing that anymore, okay? But do you bring them up on charges or not, or who knows, okay? It's one of those things that I don't know, okay? And those are some wise people that talk about at the time, but dealing with the contriteness of the individual, the family, the situation. What's their attitudes? Okay. So there's, and we're concerned. By matter of fact, we've had discussions in the last couple of weeks over that on the internet. All right. Anyway, it's not that it's occurring. Okay. No, no.
Yeah,
no.
Rephrase that.
Yeah, rephrase it. All right. Yeah. Right, Craig. All right. But there's some procedure we keep in place or not keep in place as far as that goes. All right. So this idea of legalities and that sort of thing is apparently an issue that was dealing with them. Again, it's hard for me to think of that with the Corinthians of an issue that could have occurred. But sometimes our imaginations deal with that. Maybe I'll think of one later on. Now, any questions about that part of it? All right? Now, and even some issues coming up, you know, concerning marriage and this or that, and the liberties you can have. Now, number six, who could the unbeliever, see, let me read that verse six. But brother goes to law with brother, and that before unbelievers. Now remember, up here in verse 1, it said unrighteous. And down here, it's actually got to the point of unbelievers. So you people are, there could be some unwise, unrighteous people, but now it's even using the word unbeliever. So what's the thought there? You're forcing our issues, maybe for unbelievers. I was thinking about this. Can you get a right judgment from an unbeliever?
Yes.
Can. Let's say some African countries are half Muslim and half Christian. Okay, and I've got an issue in my Christian congregation. But I come before a Muslim judge. Okay? What's a Muslim judge think about Christians? Okay? So, here's an unbeliever. Am I going to get a good judgment? Okay? Am I going to get a prejudicial judgment? Is it going to be fair? Or he's just going to... here's a congregation. Let's see if I can get rid of this congregation somehow. All right? Or keep them divided or something. That's just thoughts I'm having. So, unbelievers could be ex-people that have been withdrawn from too. Who knows? Okay? But the point is, even to the point of unrighteous people or unfair people, you could go to people who are unbelievers and try to have your... faith questions decided by them. Interesting. We talked earlier and about the idea of being spiritually appraised. Okay? And when we dealt with that question, it was the idea of the more informed you are, then you can make spiritual judgments. Can one who is a Muslim all their life make a Christian judgment? Okay? Do they know enough about it, see? So, that may be a question too, of spiritually praised or spiritual judgments based on what you know about the things of Christ. Now this was brought up a while ago. Number seven. Who wrongs and frauds in verse 7 and 8? Who is wronged and defrauded? This is another aspect to this going outside for these kind of spiritual judgments, let's say. Okay? Can I say trial? I don't think I'll say trial. All right? But who is defrauded? Who is injured? Who is wronged? Who is?
Mother, brother.
Yeah. Okay? Do the ones who, what is defrauding? I want something done to you. I'm going to do a half-truth. I'm going to lie. I'm going to cheat. I'm going to do something to get my way. That's defrauding. Well, that's an attitude, isn't it? And when you start these cases, what he's saying, when you start these kind of cases, you kind of go down that road. And a Christian wouldn't cheat. He wouldn't tell a half-truth. See, to win the case. See, and that might be what's going on, some of that. That's why he brought it up. There was a mention a while back about the 50s, 1950s, 1960s, and that sort of thing, when there were divisions. I guess all groups go through divisions. But the church support of different institutions or not, or people and that sort of thing was going on. And I don't know of it, but I heard of it. I was just on the fringe of it. But Steve has mentioned then about those divisions. And there was pretty rough feelings going on when you say, I can't do or don't support orphan homes directly. Of course, when you throw a child into it, that's a tearjerker, and everybody likes to do tears on children. Okay? It kind of diverts you from the issue. But there was hard schisms, hard issues. And a lot of it got away from the issue of what does the Bible say, okay? And what does the Bible mean, to personal issues and personal things. And that causes schisms, then, okay? Divisions, hard things, okay? Even to divide families. And defrauding and wronging was going on there. And I know one man told me one time he got up in the pulpit. He was talking about it. Please listen, brethren. You know, in a calm voice, okay, but direct. And they turned the lights out on him. Molly was there. We're not going to hear it. You know, you run around, la 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 la, that sort of thing. All right.
Very effective.
Yeah, very effective. All right. And is that the way believers should react to issues? See? Hear people out. Listen. Be calm. Okay? Now, anything else deal with that? I think we're okay. We're going to leave that issue now. But this is the idea of courts, others outside of the congregation deciding things. Especially on religious issues, okay? Can you imagine sometimes if you ever wanted to, like in chapter 5, withdraw from someone, you know, for incest, okay? Because it wouldn't repent, really. That's why you can be caught in something, but are you going to repent or not? Can you change? Can you imagine going to court for that? See? Because it embarrasses you. Makes you look worse even before the Gentile idolatrous population living in Corinth. So, anyway, you can think about that some more. If you got any thoughts, let me know. Now, what are verses 9 through 11? Okay, I know it says 12 there, but 9 through 11, teaching in context.
You must be righteous.
Okay. Righteous in your judgments. Okay. That remember that you're under the rule, the kingdom of Christ, Jesus. And that will of His, which has been Paul's deal the whole time here, the will of God is made known to you. Like it told the Ephesian elders, the whole counsel of God has been revealed to them. You got what you need to be right with God. Why in the world are you adding to it, taking away from it? Why are you displacing an apostle or even Christ? Say, with your own wisdom. Now, if I can say here, you must judge correctly for these other In reference to judging, if you have your wise men of the congregation, if you're going to judge correctly and judge righteously, what's at stake? Because you're giving advice to people, right? You're directing a course. What's at stake? Whose eternity? The one who takes the advice, right? Okay. And somewhat your eternity by the way you approach it, isn't it? Am I deceiving, see, in the way I'm giving advice? Okay.
See, I guess I kind of misunderstood. I guess I misunderstood in my answer.
Okay.
Okay. Because, you know, you're talking about, you're going to these people, they were going to these type of people for advice on how to handle a situation.
Judgments.
And, you know, and he's telling them, you know, that do you not know, to me that also
verse
translates
9.
As do not be deceived.
That's right.
These characters of people that are listed below, they are unrighteous and they will not inherit the kingdom of God.
And such were
some of you. You've changed. You're not that way anymore.
He's reminding them, okay?
But they're adulterers and they're drunkards and they're covetous and they're thieves. Stop going to them for advice on how to handle things inside the church. Did I misunderstand that?
No, I'm thinking here, he's reminding them, not the judges, okay, but these people within the congregation. Look back at your own lives. How was judgment performed on you? By God, okay, and by his ambassadors. Do you not know that the unrighteous shall not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived, neither fornicators, which we saw, idolaters, adulterers, or effeminate, or homosexuals, that's that group. In verse 10, nor thieves, nor covetous, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor swindlers shall inherit the kingdom of God. And such were some of you, but you were washed. Remember that? Remember your judgment on you? You were washed. And these are hard items. Did you go outside the congregation for that? No. God will make those judgments. But you were sanctified. But you were justified in the name by the authority of Jesus and by the Spirit of God. Spirit of God is what's been revealed. Okay, the gospel. Don't you know that in your judgment, you've got these items? Don't you know that you were saved? Don't you know that you've got the Spirit of God? Don't you know that the authority of Jesus is behind the salvation that you received? Make the judgments. That's wisdom. Okay? That's where I see that. Now,
I guess I didn't see where you changed it
right. From
who you're going to for them to...
He's reminding them, I guess you could say there.
Right, okay? But in your questions, I didn't see where you changed from...
Okay.
Who you were going to for judging, and then to you're now being judged.
That's fine. That's fine. Now, we're going to get into now narcissism, anti-Romanism, asceticism, that kind of thing. Okay? Hope y'all worked on your thoughts on that. Now, 12 through 20. Paul's going to make a transition now to what kind of issues?
Sexual morality.
That's right. The body. You got a body. You got a physical body. You individuals have a physical body. What does God think about that? What does he think about it? What has he always thought about it? Thinks back to the immorality question. Sexual immorality is what we'll deal with. All right? And verse 12, looking at that, and we'll show this, but I believe that Paul here, I guess you say he's having a conversation. Here's what you say, and here's what I say. Here's what you say, here's what I say. There's nothing unusual in that. It's called dialogue. You say, all things are lawful. He said it twice there. All things are lawful. That's what you say. But you know what the truth is? All things are not profitable. There are limitations. And again, if you looked at your Gnosticism and asceticism, and then normally you'll see what we're going here. And it says, all things are law for me, but I will not be mastered by anything. Oh. Can you not have, if you think that nothing's going to master me, all things are lawful to do with my body, then cannot your passions overwhelm you and direct your steps? Mm-hmm. If you think that the body doesn't really matter, intellect matters only, okay? Will I start to believe anything? Because that's just where I'm at, believing things. Okay? All I get my hands on. So we're going to see here, even to the next chapters, that they've got that that idea now. If your emotions and your passions and your desires rule you, what happens? What happens to your body? It gives into it, doesn't it? They dominate you. They rule you. Can it not happen? We see it. Sure we do. Okay? So God's concerned about the body. And apparently there's something going on with the Corinthians here. We've seen it already somewhat. But it's back to the old immorality question that was started in chapter 5, wasn't it? Now. So, 6:13. Well, here's what y'all say. See, you say, see, let's get some logic on this. Food is for the stomach, and the stomach is for food. That's true, right? They're fitted for each other. They're made for each other. Well, but God's going to do away with both, okay? It's going to go away. Again, all this context of body. Yet the body is not for immorality, but for the Lord, and the Lord is for the body. Now, if I need to read the next few verses to get the context. 6:14. Now, God has not only raised the Lord, but will also raise up through His power. Raise up what? The body. Okay? How important is the body to God? It's important. That's in 14. In 15. Do you not know that your bodies are members of Christ? Shall I then take away the members of Christ and make them members of a harlot? May it never be. Bodies. And then he goes on in 16, or do you not know that the one who joins himself to a harlot is one body with her? For he said the two will become one flesh. We'll deal with that. 17, but the one who joins himself to the Lord is one spirit with him. And then 18, flare morality. Every sin that a man commits is outside the body, but the immoral man sins against his own body. So if you're marking your sections, gee, what word occurs over and over? Body. The physical body. Okay? And if we think immorality associated with it, we're talking sexual immorality. Now, and their reasoning was, 13, food is for the stomach, stomach's for food. Yes. But God's telling you in here, okay, that you know what? The purpose of the body is not for immorality. Purpose of the body is to serve God morally, according to God's rules. You got your associations off. And you have to understand that to be right with God. And that gets us to our questions. I'll come back to 9. Let's see a second. Okay? We'll come back to 10. Let's go down to our definitions, 11, 12, and 13. Then we'll come back. What is Gnosticism?
I looked on the computer. This is thought and practice of various cults of late pre-Christians and early Christians.
Okay. You should call it cults if you want, but it's a method of thinking. What happened in Acts 17 when Paul went to visit in Athens? He met a bunch of guys there, and they like knowledge. Hey, man, you know, come on in and tell us about this, you know, this Jesus. Tell us about this Jehovah that you worship. Because we got all these other gods, say, in Greek culture and that sort of thing. So they're just after knowledge. And that kind of lends the point in that same idea of Gnosticism that the flesh doesn't really mean anything. the flesh is evil to an extent. All right? Now I'm going to illustrate this in a minute. Now, there's a couple of branches of this Gnosticism dealing with knowledge. Now, if you want to come to God, what you know is important. Knowledge and to know things. Now, if we talk to antinomianism, it's an extreme that says there's no law at all for the body. What you know is important. What you do with your body, it don't matter in reference to holiness, in reference to acceptance by the gods, whatever it is. All right? In other words, do anything you want with the body. Okay? That's antinomianism. Let me make one more point. Asceticism is certainly elevating the mind, but to elevate the mind, you've got to punish the body. You've got to restrict the body. You've got to restrict what food you do with it. You've got to deal with it, denying the body certain things. Okay, have you seen that before? When people... Sure. I was reading this last week in the paper. That there was a... I won't say the group. But in other words, to punish the body, to make you be more spiritual in your mind, they were... Flagellation is called. They beat each other. Okay? And they were beat. Punish the body. Okay? And they were given putrid food to eat. Punish the body. And that's supposed to purify your mind. Alright? And that's been around, and we'll see this. So, in reference to that, to keep your mind right, you might want to, some groups would forbid the marriage. Okay? To keep your mind focused. I can understand that. Paul deals with that coming up in 7, but it's only on the distress they're under. Alright? The great distress they're under. Okay? But so that's where we're going at. So when you see this idea that okay, all things are lawful for me, or I've got a body, God gave me a beautiful body, I might as well show it off. You've heard it in music sometimes. Look, I'm just I'm quite related. But music, I've got a talent for music, and I ought to be playing. Say, God gave me this. But you see it in beauty and looks sometimes for that. Now, anyway, we'll do that next time and move much faster. Thank you very, very much. So I guess we'll deal with something 9, I guess, next time. So please look at these and think about it in reference to that. And you'll see it in Colossians chapter 2 and 1 Timothy 4. But denying certain things. To eat, to wear.
In the judgment section of it?
Yes.
I mean, I know it's earthly matters that they're talking about, but in the end, God is the judge of all. Whether you're the accuser or the one that's being accused, how your attitude is and how you react, God's going to judge that.
That's exactly right. That's the idea of the attitude you have in bringing a suit.
Right.
And matter of fact, I didn't get to it.
You need to bring it.
Yeah, matter of fact, I didn't get to it, but see, there's a point in there. Why not be defrauded?
Mm-hmm.
Why not be wrong?
Mm-hmm.
See?
Yeah.
Instead of going through it and causing dissension and schism, just take it and move on.
Yeah.
And you've seen that. Mm-hmm.
I bet you lost on this, that, and
get your hair wet.
No, I'll be all right.